As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello to you all and welcome to the 63rd edition of On the Ball, a Norwich City podcast from The Athletic. I'm Michael Bailey. Hello. And I hope this finds you safe and well. On the way, Warniola's all over it. Fandomy football. I like that one. And let's play Wenduki. We'll work through all this and more with our guests this evening. Norwich number Wang Chief at NCFC Numbers, also known as our very own Steve Sanders.
Hi, Michael.
And former Norwich City publications and programme editor, although I think he was head of content once, but I don't like to talk about that, Dan Brigham.
Hi, Michael.
Look at the way you're nodding there in agreement. Like, finally he said it. Thanks for joining us, guys. As always, thanks to you all out there for listening. We always appreciate it. How are we? Steve, I'll come to you first. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Very well. I was just thinking when you read your intro there, because I think it was mentioned in the quiz as well. Do people know what the number Wang reference is? Because I don't want that to be misconstrued in any way. I mean, you know and I know, right? But
I've probably
the Mitchell and Webb thing, right?
Oh, yeah. From
that's where it's from. Okay.
Mitchell and Webb, look, they did a game.
I just wanted that clarified.
Probably got to be over 35 maybe to know that.
Yeah.
Maybe. What I will say is go and search. Well, should you search it? I don't know. I think you'd be all right, wouldn't you?
I think
one
be
word,
okay, yeah.
Number
yeah.
Wang. I think so. Maybe I'm not going to claim any responsibility for what you find. But I tell you what, search it, Mitchell and Webb look with number Wang, then hopefully you should get the correct. Yeah. But it's a great game show where they just sling out numbers. Someone shouts out a number. And that's number Wang.
Anyway, yes, in answer to your question, I'm very well, thank you.
You brought up nicely the quiz as well, which we did on Friday night. The big football quiz in terms of The Athletic, but it was the Norwich City edition. We raised loads of money for Prostate Cancer UK. We had Edward Jacobs as our winner. We had some great discussion with four Norwich City legends in Dean Ashton, Adam Drury, Simon Lappin, and Darren Huckabee. They also played along with the quiz. Obviously, Adam Drury won out of the quartet because I reckon he swatted up. I'm pretty sure he did. He certainly seemed like the most likely. And he won, I think, he won pretty well, actually. So, but yeah, Edward Jacobs was our winner. He won a signed Norwich City shirt. He's going to represent Norwich City in the grand final next month in March against all the Athletic winners. Much fun was had by all. And I really do hope that we will, maybe put the questions out somehow at some point in the future, and B, maybe do it again next year. We'll have to see. Discussions will be ongoing on that, but it would be awesome, wouldn't it? Maybe with a live audience, that sort of stuff. Oh, imagine it. Anyway, did you enjoy it, Steve?
Yes. Excellently compared, of course. I liked Huckabee's withering assessment of Yannick Vilcic. That was a highlight. And also the sort of phantom Simon Lappin, who was much higher up the leaderboard than the real Simon Lappin.
He did lie about that, didn't he? Until the end, when his conscience kicked in. It was a great night. We'll definitely do it again. Maybe independently if no one else will back us. But well, what the hell? Dan, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Really good. I've got two questions. One, what was Hux's withering assessment for those who missed it? And two, at what level of fame does Steve has to reach before the people of Norwich start shouting number Wang at him in the streets?
I think we should be there. Yeah. If you see Steve in the streets, shout number Wang at him. Nothing else rude, just that. I think that would be lovely.
It sounds like number Wang, what they shout at me. I think in answer to your first question, I think it was just Vilchit was one of the answers to one of the questions. And I think Huckabee just said something. I assume he's fine for me to repeat. He just said something like awful player, or something like that.
I remember there being led back. I'm pretty sure it was beep worthy. And I got confused that he was talking about Marco Steepman. I was like, that's harsh. And he was like, no.
Had Hux been on a cup on the generic lager at that point?
No, he only drinks on Sundays, which is what I found out. He was watching Watford Derby at the same time, though, so maybe he got a bit distracted, which is fair enough, you know. Lovely to see you anyway, Dan. And that is a massive mic and not a euphemism. That is a massive mic.
I am a very small man, so it's probably just proportionate, isn't it?
Crack on quickly. The Champions League is back, and to celebrate, we are offering new subscribers a half-price annual subscription to The Athletic. That's less than £1 per week for an entire year. To redeem that limited time only offer, go to theathletic.com/NorwichPod. That's theathletic.com/NorwichPod. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review. I reckon we crack on with this week's headline act. So Norwich City played Rotherham on Saturday, and it did kind of amuse me, including in this podcast, by the way, that everyone was sort of, yeah, Paul Warren, Norwich fan. But I did take it upon myself to get hold of Paul Warren in advance and talk to him about his build-up for the game, what was going through his mind. I spoke to him on Friday. I spoke to him on Saturday on the morning of the match about how his thoughts had evolved. And then I spoke to him on the press conference after the game, which was funny because I couldn't turn the video on the Zoom for some reason. So my name just popped up and to sort of no one else was saying anything. So this was how we were going to start the press conference. And Paul Vaughan went, oh yeah, he's my favorite on the Zoom, which was, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I was like, that's quite a hilarious way to start a press conference. And then after he'd left, or after he'd gone to Morrison's to go and get some snacks and he was on the team bus, I spoke to him again before he got home. And the result is 3,500 words on The Athletic. But I tell you what, I read through them afterwards, desperate to cut them because I thought that might be a bit long. And it read much quicker to me, and I'd written it, and which doesn't normally happen. And I have to say, it felt like one of the most remarkable pieces in 14 years that I've been able to write, because he was a manager talking me through everything he was thinking about ahead of a game and actually trusting me to tell me, which was something I had to really earn. And also the reaction. I mean, so many managers probably would go home and kick the cat and never mind how odd an actual conversation with you on the way home after a defeat, albeit probably a defeat that earned them a fair bit of plaudits for how they went about it. And you know, I can't help just wishing and hoping that they stay up, because I think Paul Warren and whoever deserve it, because he's just an absolute gent of a man. But I mean, just from writing it and receiving it, I know I'm going on a bit of a monologue here, it was just an extraordinary piece to put together. So I'm really happy with it. I hope you get to read it. If not, Steve, what did you make of of his thoughts in terms of what's going through his mind before and after the game? And obviously, if you feel like it wasn't that exceptional, please say, because it's not about me writing it. Paul being open. I'm not blowing my own trumpet here. It's the fact that he was that open about it, really.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was an excellent piece, and I wasn't going to say that without you teeing me up for it. and nice to know that his that man crush goes both ways as well, because there's definitely some love on your side for Warney as well. It was fascinating, and I suppose as a Norwich City fan, for Norwich City fans listening, the way that he set up to try and nullify Norwich's threats, I thought it was interesting that, you know, when Middlesbrough came here and marked Cantwell out of the game, my sort of initial thought was, you know, why doesn't everyone just do that then? made a good job of it. And he said, we just couldn't, like, the system we play wouldn't allow for that. We'd have players completely out of position. I spoke that the respect for Todd generally came through from the piece and where he saw Norwich City's threat lying. I mean, I think Warren has got this whole Norwich City fan love thing down to a T, because I think what we've played them four times in the championship in the last couple of seasons. And I think every single time they've given us a decent game, like they've taken the lead a couple of times, but ultimately we come through and all the fans go away thinking, aren't they great? You know, like, what, it's a lovely bloke. Not quite good enough to get anything off us, but I'm sure they'll be fine and I hope they stay up. And that was kind of the impression that they left on Saturday as well.
Bit wasted, given there was no one in the ground at Carrow. I mean, it's interesting that I think I put this in the comments, actually, because someone mentioned it. The one curiosity I had was how it would go down with Rotherham fans, because it's, you know, it's a lot of talk about Norwich City from the Rotherham manager, but not really. It's also about how his side would set up against them. And I think I could see them maybe a bit like what you've said there, I suppose, Steve, like this idea that, oh, you know, it's almost a fatality and futility to taking on Norwich as Rotherham in the same way. And he said it himself to me, actually, that, you know, Rotherham in the Championship is similar to Norwich in the Premier League, really. You've got a similar kind of challenge if you're going to Norwich, going to Man City, as Rotherham going to Norwich. But at watching him on the touchline, you know, nothing of what he said to me, you know, he was realistic about how difficult the challenge was, but nothing of it was about being defeatist. It was literally at the top of his mind, how are we going to get something from this, regardless of it maybe not being the most important fixture, which again is something you'd hear a Norwich manager say of an equivalent in the Premier League. But so I'm glad that from the Rotherham fans I've interacted with or seen interacting with it, they haven't seen it like that, which I think is a good thing, because I don't think that's Paul Warne's mentality in his head either.
It's interesting. I wasn't at the game in 18-19 at Rotherham, but their fans ended up hating us, didn't they?
From what me especially. It was like my third trip to Yorkshire, and Yorkshire people really don't like me. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I they can't take it and they can only dish it out. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to wind them up with that comment, but yeah.
Yeah, lives like that.
I mean, generalizations do tend to wind people up, I suppose, Michael.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
I don't know. I've not interacted with Rotherham fans. What I found interesting from the piece on as a general point was that sort of access is rare, right? Sort of harking back to Brian Clough's days when I think Duncan Hamilton at the Nottingham Post used to be on the team bus to matches there and back. You know, that's long gone. So, but to get anywhere near that is pretty rare now with a coach. So it was really interesting sort of getting those insights, especially in retrospect with the result of the game as well. And what I found interesting about his comments on Norwich were him sort of talking about the centre of the pitch and us having a lot of energy there, because that's certainly something we've lacked for the last couple of seasons, I think, even in 18-19. And, you know, everyone loves Alex Tetti. I think he's an outstanding player and still has a lot to give the football club. But what you would say probably is Tetti and, say, Mario Rancic or Tetti and Leitner in 18-19 didn't have that energy in the middle of the pitch. So it was all about ball retention and keeping hold of the ball and dominating teams like that, and we suffered in the Premier League because of it as well. But Skip and Kenny in the middle are full of energy, full of running. Just the amount of times that Skip comes back to reclaim the ball as well and fill in for the fullbacks has made a massive difference as well, and that's massively contributed to our better defence this season as well. And I hadn't really thought of it like that, but it's obviously been a position where we've tried to improve in the centre of the park in terms of sort of box to box, and we've done that this season. Whether we can keep hold of Skip if we do go up, and whether McLean is really of Premier League quality, I'm not sure, but it's certainly an area of the pitch that we've really improved in this season.
Yeah, I think I kind of noticed during the game, actually, just you were saying that reminded me of it, Dan, that Rotherham did try and hit the channels a few times in the first half. And Skip's energy is just unbelievable. You know, he can, I don't know whether it's something that Farkas told him to do, but he seems to be able to mop up those, you know, help out his fullbacks in a way that, yeah, someone like Tetti just doesn't have the energy to do. And I think a few teams have had a bit of joy playing that way, but the first half, I just felt that we didn't give Rotherham a sniff, really, in that regard.
Well, Tetti is very good at filling in as a sort of third centre-back, isn't he? Mm. And Skip is very good at filling in as both a left and right full-back as well, which is, I think, you know, he's able to cover more of the pitch, which, you know, being 14 years younger is probably a massive contributory factor to that as well.
I'm so I've definitely noticed this, how Ollie Skip does that. And I don't think Daniel Farke had a system that required the midfielder to do that. I think it was more structured in picking the ball up in the middle. And then it was easy to kind of take the midfielder out of that game from in terms of being the opposition. So that I think is, and actually, little insight, this is what you've said there. Well, I can't remember who mentioned it, but both of you basically is exactly what I asked Daniel Farke during his press conference today about that, that different energy and physicality in the middle. And he gave a really interesting answer, which I'm not going to give all now because I'm hopefully going to be writing a piece on it this week. But again, that structure, I think they've looked at that over those last two seasons, and they've made significant differences into the shape and the structure of the team so that there's more flexibility. And obviously they then make sure they've got the personnel to do it. And that's clearly something that Paul Warren picked up on as well in terms of how to try to counter it. And let's be realistic here. I mean, Norwich could have won by 5 or 6 on Saturday. Likewise, Rotherham could have picked up a point. So I don't think there's any sort of ignoring the reality of what the game was. But I also don't think that alters really the insight of someone trying to figure it out and unpick it.
And just on that, I think I said on this podcast at the start of the season, lots of people said it at the time, I didn't think McLean and Skip were really an excellent pairing in central midfield. So I thought they were too similar. I thought Skip was maybe the slightly improved version of McLean, but that's not proven to be the case at all. Unlike Gerrard and Lampard in the 2000s, they know when to go and when to sit. You rarely see both of them bombing on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And leaving gaps behind them. So they've already formed a really excellent partnership, I think, a good understanding.
I mean, I don't wish to dwell on the negative here, but I think Skip's been so good that you do look ahead to next season. And I know we've spoken about this before. And you think whatever division Norwich City are in, chances are we're not going to have him because he'll be part of Spurs' first team squad. How do you replace somebody with the attributes that he's got? Because he is so energetic. He wins 50-50. He goes into challenges. He's got good positional sense. I think that will be whichever league we're in. I think that's first on our shopping list, is to somehow find somebody to replace him.
And not to bang on about Skip, but just one extra. In his press conference, I think I saw you reporting the quotes last week, Michael, with him saying, Daniel Farke is saying that Skip needs to add goals and assists to his game. And within the sort of first 5 minutes on Saturday, he was noticeably arriving into the box, Skip was. So I don't know whether that was a coincidence or whether he's just an incredibly quick learner and can adapt quickly as well. Wow. So interesting to see if you do see him sort of getting into the box a little bit more now.
Well, it's more of a challenge maybe to see what he does if he gets the ball in those areas, because I think if there was a weakness, it's when he gets sort of any further than halfway with the ball at his feet sometimes. It's an interesting one. I'm not convinced Norwich couldn't, if they go up, Norwich couldn't get him back on loan. I think it'd be a big shout for Jose to throw him into Spurs, regardless of...
It would be so sad to see him kind of wasted, getting, you know, the odd kind of hour in the Europa League and, you know, maybe a few minutes off the bench as Spurs forlornly try and chase back a 2-0 deficit or something. You know, it feels like he deserves more than that.
It would be the next stage of a bit of development, I think, playing in the Premier League, obviously. So then it's a question of who. And I think there's a fair amount to be said of being in the same environment if Norwich can bring in some players around him. But, you know, there's a lot maybe to be discussed, and Norwich need to get there first, which is maybe where we should start with that one. The final point I'm going to make, Kenny McLean in the last 10 minutes, 15 minutes on Saturday, I thought he was outstanding. Really, really did a wonderful job and is doing very well. So I just to wrap up there, I hope that didn't come across as me being blowing my own trumpet at the start. It was genuinely, I just wanted to put across the fact that in 14 years of doing this job, I've never quite been able to write a piece like that. And therefore, I sort of gushed out in terms of how proud I was to put it together. So there you go. By the way, those of you who listened to the podcast last week, who may well have heard us joke about whether Paul Warren goes around saying he's a Bournemouth fan to before they play Bournemouth, and a Forest fan when they play Forest. I told him that, and he was very amused at that point. And he said he used to wear a Nottingham Forest shirt when he was at uni there, and he loved the Reading shirt from several years ago. He may have been joking, but let's take him as being serious, shall we?
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. dedicated staff, and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I tell you what, let's crack on, shall we, with this week's things we are not going to talk about. These are the things that have happened and deserve acknowledgement, but we are only going to acknowledge them by stating how we are not going to talk about them. Make sense? Good. We also only have 3 minutes to do it. So if we can cue the dramatic music, please, producer Ollie, if I can get all those words out. Excellent. This week, I am not going to talk about Todd's assist, because I tell you what, that goal on Saturday will go down as Emi Buendia's pass and Tane Rupuki's finish. Yes, we might talk about that in a moment. But the dummy, although it wasn't quite over the ball as I thought it was in real time, but his dummy took the defenders out and just allowed the goal to unfold. So I don't know what the stat should be for that, like XT for threat. I think that the people are trying to model this stuff, but I think he gets a second assist, even though he never touched the ball. Remarkable scenes. What are you guys not going to talk about, Dan?
Well, with the greatest respect, let's hope we never talk about. We don't have to talk about Paul Warne again for a good few seasons, because only because it will mean we won't be in the same division as Rotherham.
We'll see him back here again in 2 years' time, won't we? But let's be honest. We'll have 1 year off, and then he'll take him down and then bring him back up again. That's probably
outstanding. Just bouncing, yo-yoing together in perfect unison. What a way. We're not going to talk about subs, by the way. I think Norwich I can't remember if it was Coventry or Rotherham, but one of those games, I think it might have been Coventry. They made all five subs. Norwich hadn't made a sub, and it got into injury time. Which is just remarkable.
To me, though, that smacks to me of the back end of the 2018-19 season, where the only thing that people had to moan about was the fact that Farke didn't make his subs early enough. We were winning, and I think, you know, you've got, if he's picking pretty much the same 11 and just bringing players on at the end because we're in the lead, I kind of don't have a problem with that, really. In terms of what I'd like to not talk about, Todd, actually, more generally, has really stepped up the last couple of games. Like, it was interesting to hear the Coventry commentators talking about what an outstanding player he is. And that's when you kind of think, actually, yeah, we are really lucky to have somebody like that come through our academy who can just take a game by the scruff of the neck and just look as good as that. And, you know, you think back to the Bournemouth game, we were thinking him and Emi could not play for the club again. And it's great to see them both in tandem the way they are quite now.
I tell you what, Todd has been outstanding the last two games. And it's only because of how well Emi and Timmy were doing, really, that it's almost overshadowed it in terms of their goals and output. But I think Todd,
it's longer than that as well, isn't it, to be, since he's come back from his knock. I think he's been outstanding for us.
I don't want to talk about Michael Ihekwe's challenge on Emi Buendia.
How is Emi?
He's fine. He's available for Birmingham, which is not in Coventry. So that's it. So it wasn't a great challenge. I joked to Daniel Farke today, imagine if Emi had made that challenge on a Ihekwe, what would have happened? I think he'd probably been booked and probably would have already been on a yellow, who knows. Norwich won against Coventry in Birmingham 2-0. I'm really not going to talk about the reaction to stating that Coventry wasn't in Birmingham on Wednesday night, because that, I've just never known anything like it. It's just nuts.
Well,
more Coventry this season, that's good.
Well, they were absolutely terrible, I thought, and then and then beat
the fans or the team.
Then, well, I have no comment to make on the fans, but then beat Brentford on Saturday, which obviously you must be doubly delighted about, Michael, because of your kind of loathing for Thomas Frank as well.
So. It's not a loathing. It's just something like I. He's one of those managers. By the music's done, by the way, we're done. But he's one of those managers where I find myself wanting to see him see how he's going to react to these defeats. I don't know. I mean, what was he? He asked all the officials to change their kit, didn't he, at halftime on Saturday? Because, I mean, admittedly, they were all in black and Coventry were in a really deep navy. So it was a stupid colour clash. And as a referee, how do you not look at that and go, well, yeah, we probably should change our kit, lads. You know, it's like, duh. So they came out in this pink. But why is the man, I don't know, like it's not going to affect his team, is it, Thomas? I love him, really. He's not that bad. He's a good manager.
Just quickly on Brentford, can we not talk about the two best teams in the Championship being moved to Sky Sports Arena for a 5:30 kickoff next Wednesday? They are absolute disrespect of them doing that on Sky.
That's to give it. But at this point,
stick it on Sky Sports 1 at 8 o'clock.
Well, I don't think, maybe they couldn't. Maybe there wasn't a slot.
5:30.
I don't know about you, but normally still working. Got to have your tea.
Yeah, but everyone's working from home, so no one cares, do they? It's all up in the air. Screw it. In fairness, I guess if it had still been at the same kickoff time, no one would have been able to watch it. Maybe.
Why not? Right?
Maybe on iFollow. Anyway.
And sorry, just one more on Brentford.
Why not?
I just want to shout out for Hodge Stradamus, as I'm now calling him, who came on this podcast 2 weeks ago and basically proclaimed the title race was over because Brentford were going to romp to.
Oh,
romp
gosh.
I think they've lost 3 out of 4 since then.
Was it? It was, maybe it was, because I said this obviously last week, didn't I? That I couldn't understand where this, where the narrative of Norwich falling down was met by the narrative of Brentford clearly now going to win the division. And maybe it was Hodgie's.
It was me and Stuart from the week before.
It's all your fault. It's also Tom Warville's fault, our extremely talented guy who wrote the piece. You know, Brentford are made for the Premier League. They haven't won a game since he wrote that. So,
it was nothing Don Goodman didn't say as well. He was saying it was Brentford's title 2 weeks ago.
But what I don't like, I get that. Well, I'm not going to say the same as last week. It's fine. I'm really not going to.
They're an excellent team. They'll probably still go up. But
exactly. May well be. And the curious thing about Swansea, obviously, that was a terrible defeat for them. But what I picked up on was actually, I think Huddersfield were the last team to beat them at the Liberty as well. So maybe Huddersfield just have Swansea's number. I guess we'll see. What I also wasn't going to talk about was Delia Smith talking about football owners and Max Ahrens. There's nothing there we didn't know. And fans return, which is, of course, the big news of Monday evening as we record. At the moment, there won't be any fans at Carrow Road and for the rest of this regular season, basically. Might be different if Norwich end up in the playoffs. Also, Norwich will be at the forefront of trying to get pilot events at Carrow Road involving testing, which would mean a quarter of 27,000, which I guess off the top of my head is 6,000 or 7,000-ish inside Carrow Road if their Norwich opt for to be involved in the pilot and test schemes, which would be from the middle of April, I would assume, and probably involve testing. And it would be a bigger event in term and also bigger protocols than what we had before. It would be great, obviously, with where Norwich are, to have some fans in the ground. We can keep all and everything crossed that it happens. Fingers crossed.
You were there on Saturday, but on the TV it just looked just really lovely in the sunshine, Carrow Road. There are very few grounds that look nicer than Carrow Road when the sun's shining, and it did make me pine for it. So today's news was very welcome.
And got to get ready for that open top bus tour as well through the city.
With 100 points and 100 goals, and John Rogers will be walking out in front of it with his big scarf.
Walking out in front of the bus?
Well, not literally.
One way to grab attention, isn't it?
Right, time for Centrefold. It's going to be a two-parter this week. First up, on Friday, I, for the first time, got to speak to Norwich City on loan left-back, although we'd hope it'll be permanent, Dimitris Yiannoulis. That was a pleasure. And you know what? Here's the chat.
Did you know any of the Norwich players before you came here, or how many of them were you aware of?
Yes, I knew Timo Pukki because we played in Nations League as opponents. I knew Cantwell, Todd, because I used to pick him in Premier League fantasy, to be honest, last year.
Have you told him that?
Yeah, I told him.
I bet he loved that. Yeah.
Also, Emmy, also Skip from Tottenham, I knew him. And also Krul, of course.
Of course, brilliant. Yes. Just away from the football, or maybe not, has there been anything really surprising about moving to England? Has there been anything that culturally or just in terms of how things are that have sort of made it obvious how different it is?
To be honest, because I was ready to face a different reality than Greece. You know, because Greece is something different than England. The way of life is totally different. So I was ready to face this reality, and for now it's everything okay.
It must be very strange moving to a club where you don't really get to see any fans. I mean, you won't have the, normally you could walk around the city and you'd maybe bump into them, or you certainly see them obviously at a game. I mean, how is that?
It's a bit strange, but you have to adapt also, so there's no problem for me.
There were a lot of clubs that have been linked to you while you're at Pauk over the last year or so. I mean, some really, really big names as well. Did you ever feel like any of those were becoming particularly close or anything like that?
Yes, I was close to sign to Atalanta last October, but it didn't happen. So many teams were interested, but it's a different thing to wanting to be interested for you and to make an offer for you. Yes.
Yeah.
But yes, at the end, I'm player of City and I'm very happy for this. And I think I did the best choice for me.
I was going to say, when you first heard that Norwich were interested, was this a move where you were like, I want to this one to happen?
Yes, it was like this, but I had discussed first with the owner of Pauk, because, to be honest, we had to take this decision together, because we had a very good relationship, and he's like father for me. So I had discussed with him, with my agent also, but was the potential of playing for Premier League is too big. So yes, I did the next step.
Just two more, if I may. Because I'm not going to finish on the Stoke game, but your pass after for the goal. I know that the goal that was conceded. I know that Daniel Farke said, you know, that his players don't make horizontal passes. So I guess that was something he made quite clear to you after the game.
Yes, he did. But to be honest, I didn't want to make this pass. I want to just to chip the ball to switch the side. Yes, but yes, he made it clear to me and. Which I speak with him, so now everything is clear and it will not happen again for sure.
It's okay, because Kenny McLean played a worse pass, so you're fine. And just finally, I mean, at the game at Coventry, I think what hit me was that you seemed more comfortable. I don't know what that was, but there were more touches and you seemed to be you could see that you'd adapted maybe to the pace and what you could do around it. Did it feel like that? And I guess there's more to come as well.
Yes, I felt really, really good in this game. I need to play some games so I can do what I can in the pitch, because it's not easy from the first game to show everything. You need some time to adapt the new style of football. And also it's difficult for me, because as I told before, is the championship is totally different than Super League, Greek Super League. So yes, I think game by game I will be better, and I will help the team to get promoted. This is the target.
He's doing quite well, isn't he, Steve? Seeing him grow into his role, and I think now you can really see the quality that he's bringing as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think the last two games he's been really good, really direct, which is, I think, what we hoped from him. His debut was bad. I think we can all agree on that. But yeah, I think he was, I'd say after Todd, he might be our outstanding player from the two games that have happened this week. And he's starting to kind of occupy that space that was there, that kind of naturally appears when Todd drifts in field. And he looks like he's got a good delivery into the box as well, which is something that Jamal often lacked. So, yeah, promising signs.
He gets his head up, most definitely. And so it's obviously really great to see him kicking on like that. And defensively, Dan, I mean, you know, coming up against championship players, but it's not like it's a major weakness at this level, certainly. It's not like he's Ivo Pinto, bless Ivo, you know, who immediately looked a bit short defensively. You know, he looks
exactly
like he's got
biceps. I was going to say, actually, yeah. Yeah, no, poor Ivo. But he looks like he has a physicality to deal with whatever the Championship and the Premier League can throw at him. And it's just nice as wonderful as Sorensen was at left back, it's just nice that we're no longer lopsided out wide, which we were while Sorensen was doing sterling work defensively. But Giannoulis has brought in a sort of real attacking threat that we've probably not had since Jamal Lewis.
And part two, if I may, of Centrefold, once you've read Paul Warne, obviously, give my piece on Emi and Teemu a read. It was on their magic partnership following the Coventry win. The debate that's almost raged since that game really is how good this partnership is. And do we even have to rank them, Steve? Do we care that it's more or less productive than Wes Houlihan and Holt? Can't they just be amazing partnerships in different eras?
If you're obsessed with kind of comparing the numbers, like some people seem to be on Twitter, then yeah. But
people just keep putting out these numbers, Steve. It just degenerates into rankings.
To repeat this point, but Houlihan only set Holt up three times in their final three seasons together, which I was really surprised to find out.
Rude.
So I think the two of them suit each other's game down to the ground. I think I said it 2 weeks ago. Emi's capacity to play players in and Teemu just playing off the shoulder of the last defender. Obviously, this partnership's not going to last forever. It'll just be interesting to see how well they get on when one moves on, which I guess will probably be Emi first.
There's something about them that reminds me of Mahrez and Vardy from Leicester's title-winning season. And I always thought, I thought last season I was surprised Leicester didn't take a punt on Pukki because he just seems a pretty ready-made replacement for Vardy. I mean, not massively younger, but still got 3 or 4 years on him. So a little bit surprised they didn't look to take him in. I think my favourite thing about Emi's and Pukki's partnership is you know exactly what they're going to do, but because they do it so well, there's no stopping them a lot of the time. And I think that their combination goal against Coventry was a sort of perfect example of that. One pass from Skip to Emi, little control, straight through. You knew it was going to happen, but Coventry defence had stepped up and Pukki's so good at running off the shoulder. It's just a matter of whether he has the composure to take it, and more often than not, he does. So how do you counter that sort of threat as a championship defence? It's almost impossible.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, it's time for John Motson.
This is almost fantasy football.
There he is. We are recording, as we usually do on Monday, but it's another busy week with Norwich at Birmingham on Tuesday night, not Coventry. That's 7 p.m. kickoff. And Sunday's lunchtime kickoff is then at Wickham, Sunday. Don't miss it. Saying to me, myself, as much as anyone else. So what I want is us to paint a picture of the forthcoming 7 days, and then we are most likely allowing you to laugh at our picture with the valuable gift of hindsight. So what do we think is going to happen? Let's paint the picture. Birmingham, back at St. Andrews, that wonderful pitch. Hopefully Norwich get through it injury free again. That would be nice. Anything else?
We're going to be left with a lovely warm glow of how well Norwich City play compared to Karanka's Birmingham. They've stunk out the championship more than any team we've played so far, I think, this season.
I see Daniel Farker today.
They came to Carrow for a 1-0 defeat, essentially.
They did. I think Aitor literally said to people at Norwich after the game, no, we couldn't come and play football. We just get smashed. So it's like, okay, fair enough. It's like zero ambition, which I'm sure will be very similar at St. Andrews as well. Daniel Farker today said he said, oh, you know, yeah, Birmingham, they've got really good players and they've got a really experienced manager. So he expects them to finish mid-table. And it just made me realize how he says that about every team, that there would be no team that would finish in the bottom three. Because I mean, Chris Hughton didn't get away with that because people used to think he was just bigging up the opposition all the time. But Stanley Parker does seem to get away with it. But there we go. So I look forward to seeing Birmingham finish in mid-table. I'm not quite sure how they're going to achieve that at the moment, Steve. But I suppose beating Norwich would be a good start. So fingers crossed they don't.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I was quite pleased to see them win at the weekend because I thought had they lost to Sheffield Wednesday, then Cranker probably would have been out of a job and there might have been a bit of new manager bounce. That's kind of the only way that I could see them doing a number on us. And I think Sheffield Wednesday were down to 10 men in that game as well. So, yeah, we know that pitch. And we've, yeah, like Dan says, the reverse fixture against Birmingham was a bit of a joke, really, in terms of how much they sat back. I don't think they'll be able to do that in the same way. And I think we'll just pick them off. And then Farker will probably say that Wickham will finish in mid-table as well before Sunday's game.
That's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that before. Yeah. I mean, I went on the Totally Football League show a couple of weeks ago and basically said they were already down, Wickham. So, and I mean, you know, they're still gallantly plugging away. But, you know, the fact they're even at this level is... Probably, I mean, to be honest, even if football hadn't stopped last season, I'm not sure they would have got a place in the playoffs, never mind won it, because they were in absolute free fall. And you don't know, obviously, but just a remarkable story in itself. So, yeah, what Daniel will say about, if Daniel Farker will say about that will be interesting.
And also, to see a manager in a leather jacket in the dugout as well.
Style, amazing style.
I was going to say, like, we're coming up against two sort of well... coiffured managers as well this week, aren't we? So that'll be just a nice I don't know who I didn't see the Wickham game at home, so I don't know, this may have been commented on at the time with Ainsworth, but you know, Ainsworth versus Farker, just for the touchline elegance. I don't know, is elegance probably
elegance.
It's the wrong word, isn't it?
Not sure what the word is really. It's
I'll end my point there then, in that case.
Style. I thought I remember Wickham was the game I watched from the lounge with fans, so it's the closest I've been to fans for in a year basically. It was a wonderful experience in some ways, but I thought Wickham were really good, although Norwich They took the lead after 3 minutes and then was like, all right, well, this will be easy. And then just could not, like that thing in the championship, if you take your foot off the pedal and lose your momentum, it is almost impossible to gain it back in the match. And that was, they were just chasing their tails then until like a last minute free kick from Mario, obviously. But yeah, it'll be a really interesting game in terms of how Norwich approach and deal with it, I think.
I'm just imagining Farker and Ainsworth fronting some sort of hair metal band from the 80s.
You know,
tribute act to Iron Maiden.
That would be good. I would listen to that.
That's one for the young listeners.
My dad would have loved it. I think last week we mentioned about Ollie Skip. I think it was my prediction that he would come out wearing goggles because he got a finger in his eye, obviously, and that brought up the discussion over binoculars football, which I'd randomly seen on Japanese TV, and I got looks from both John and Ben last week being like, why are you making all of this up? Well, I'm delighted to say, I think there were at least two or three tweets I received of the clips of binoculars football. It is really a thing and it is amazing. It is just as good as I thought. I forgot to retweet them, so I'm going to have to retweet them.
Can we expect like 10,000 words on The Athletic on binocular football?
No, unless they get me to play it, which I'm hoping will never happen, because I look like that when I play normal football. I don't need binoculars to go and swing my leg at a ball and be nowhere near making contact.
Both Steve and I can confirm that's true.
Cheeky. Wouldn't it be nice to go and play football? I mean...
Well, we can soon. We can.
Yeah.
Just literally not playing football. What about all those fans out there who can't even play football themselves? So yeah, soon. Anyway, anything else? What, that's it really, isn't it?
I've got a question if we've got time. But Steve, you go first. You seem prepped already.
No, I was actually going to say 6 points. So that's as much prep as I was going to do. That's my prediction, 6 points.
Bam.
Do you, Dan?
Yes, would agree, 6 points.
And of course, Wickham also have Anis Mehmeti, who was a Norwich under-18s player until the end of last season. And now he's like playing in their first team. So going to be a great moment for him. Maybe he'll score, maybe on Sunday. We'll throw that in. Go on. Go on, Anis, do your best. Away you go. Okay, well, I think in that case, that's time for On the Ball this week. If you're yet to do so, Make sure you subscribe via your podcast player of choice. And the pod is available free for everyone on your usual player and ad-free to subscribers of The Athletic via our app. Please leave a review or a rating if you get the chance and spread word of our efforts across the Norwich City world if you so wish. To get in touch, ask a question or propose a topic for discussion, sling me a direct message on Twitter. The handle is at Michael J. Bailey. I know there are a few of you who've done that. I'll catch up on some of those when maybe there's not a midweek game, but I will promise I always make sure I read them in the end. Don't worry about that. In the meantime, a big thank you to our guests tonight. Thank you very much, Steve.
Here's Michael.
Dan, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
We'll be back next week for another On the Ball, a Norwich City podcast from The Athletic. Until then, never mind the danger. And we're clear. There we go. That is it for the podcast. Happy days. Steve and Dan, we've managed to get to wit's end.
Yes.
Yes.
Just about.
Should I reveal my faux pas? I've just started talking about wit's end in the last segment of the show because I got confused.
You started talking about Stephen Whittaker. I was like, no, what are you doing?
That's the word, isn't it? That's the safe word is Stephen Whittaker. Never talk about him in the main podcast.
Never, which will be awkward when we get stuck into the Houghton era. But there we go. I mean, we're all assuming that producer Ollie has done a really sound job of editing it. If not, you'll have heard it anyway. So we'll just go over it again. But that's grand. I trust Ollie implicitly. Hello, everyone out there, by the way. Welcome to Wit's End. Welcome, all you Twitterkers. If any of you have stumbled across this for the first time and are wondering what's going on, listen to On the Ball podcast number 42. That was live on September the 8th. It's all explained there. You can email this part of the show podcast directly with an email to Twitterkers, Twitter, K-E-R-S, at iCloud.com, or use the hashtag Twitterkers on Twitter. Just don't explain what it is referring to, of course. The outstanding twitterkers.co.uk website, visit it. Someone's put it together for us. We don't know who it is, but they're doing a sterling job. That said, they have had an interaction with John Rogers this week, because obviously John last week complained that his name was spelt wrong and then somehow felt that it was maybe not the best idea that he pointed it out, but couldn't likewise ignore it. So they have responded by putting his direct quote from last week's Wit's End onto twitterkers.co.uk. And I quote, "It's a rubbish website, officially a rubbish website," quote, "Jonah Rogers." Don't mess with the people who are putting it together. And they've done a lovely background, by the way, which says chillax all over it. Very impressed with that.
To go meta on it, I would not be surprised if it's John doing that website.
In a remarkable twist of fate. And I have been being challenged, obviously, via Twitterkers and all you lovely Twitterkers and Witsenders out there. That's a new term, Witsenders, to do things in my video verdict. So I hope you all picked up on the fact that I did manage to get the word. Oh, go on, Steve.
Yes. No, I was very impressed. In fact, you got two references in for after the Coventry game. And the other one, I think, may have been lost on our...
Yeah, so I managed to say chillax in the video verdict. And also... in our WhatsApp group, I'd put, instead of fun was had, I put fun was hard, or something like that. So it was fun hard. I can't remember exactly what it was, but okay. There we go. I managed to put in the sentence that involved fun and hard, which apparently was funny. But it actually made sense when I thought
I was incredibly impressed. In fact, I had to go back and check that you'd actually done it, and you said hard instead of had, and I thought, wow, he's done that very, very well. But we need to keep those coming in, because that's all I'm listening out for now, quite honestly. I couldn't care less what you thought about the game. I'm just waiting for this.
To that end, I think I did get Charlie, we're going to try and get your email in tonight, but I've got to admit, it's not looking good. So I'll apologise now, and we'll probably read it next week.
Michael, we still need to segue into Yannick Vilchert somehow.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, oh, I did... Was that it? Was that the segue just there?
Let's do it. Yeah. Well, yeah. Carry on, Dan.
So I'll pretend I've not already accidentally mentioned this before.
No one's heard it.
That was edited out. but Hux's reference to unfair reference, I think, to Yannick Wilsgut, who I thought was decent enough, maybe not top championship level, but it reminded me, in fact, whenever I think of his name, it always reminds me of him being played as a right wing back in Daniel Farke's first ever game in Norwich City against Fulham, which all then got me thinking in reference to our dear leader, Stephen Whittaker, about players being played out of position and sort of favourite moments of that. I don't know if you've got any. I always enjoyed Tim Closer being thrown up front the 18-19 title winning season when we were chasing an equaliser or victory. He seemed to have something about him up there. Also thought he could have made a decent centre forward. And then obviously Mark Bowen, if you're going back quite a lot longer, him going in goal after a couple of sending offs, we had no goalkeeper on the bench.
Well,
I don't know if you guys have any.
There's a good few goalkeepers, aren't there? And I suppose there are those defenders who sort of did almost makeshift roles up front, like Gary Doherty, Rob Newman. Chris Sutton then actually became a striker. Quite a good one.
I was going to throw in, I mean, I don't know if they have to be good ones, but Darryl Russell going up front for half the season to Glenn Roeder. That's a bit of a favourite. I think he scored in the first home game of that season. He was like, yes. This
Glenn Roeder guy's a genius.
Yeah. I tell you what, our
20 goal a season striker was here all along playing in centre midfield.
There is something quite futile about interviewing Darryl Russell in that period, because you'd be like, you know, you playing up front, and he'd literally be like, yeah, I'm doing what I'm told. I've got no idea what I'm doing up there, but I'm just going to keep going until, you know, we have a striker. He's like, I don't know what I'm doing, but, you know, the manager's telling me to play here, so I better, you know, play here. I actually thought Yannick in that Fulham game did really well. He created Norwich's two best opportunities in that game, pretty much.
I guess Sorensen at left back as well is a shout for that, like, given how well he adapted to that. And I've thought of one more. I remember Chris Llewellyn having, I can't remember who it was against, but having the most terrible game at left back 1 year. It was towards the end of his time at Norwich. And I think Worthington, perhaps Drew was injured or something, and Worthington put Llewellyn at left back, and he had an absolute shocker, got torn apart by their right winger. That would just sprung to mind.
Ouch. I mean, Alex Tetti at centre back, I mean, there was some of those were a little bit ropey.
Well, I thought he was excellent at Bournemouth though, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah. No, I think probably I'm talking about at Premier League level, like at Brighton, which was a bit like grimace, if that was what that face was, you wouldn't have seen it. But also one of my favourites, which was your question, Marco Stiefelman at Sheffield United. He was great that day. And, you know, for someone born to score goals, he didn't half cover left-back well. And Norwich won at Sheffield United and Chris Wilder started banging his table. What was not to like?
So he's played left-back, centre midfield, number 10, and as a false number 9 for us now, Stephen, hasn't he?
Total football. Are we covered? Let's have a look. Alex Ware's tweet, and I think it sort of filtered into last week's conversation. It was merely a picture of a man. I'm guessing it's a generic meme that gets sent around, but it's a man with a cup of tea waiting for people to come up and talk to him. And on the sheet of paper in front of the desk, prompting people to come and talk to him, is Yusuf Safri versus Newcastle is the best Norwich goal of all time. Change my mind. Does anyone want to change his mind on that?
Well, just in fashion, you. I mean,
it's not a bad shout, though.
I think if we'd stayed up, then
maybe.
Which is it? But that's the point, isn't it? So, Justin Fashanu's goal came in a 5-3 defeat to Liverpool at home. Yeah. It was nothing more than a consolation at the point he scored it. I think
Tessie's winner against Sunderland again. We ended up getting relegated.
Yeah. Johnny Howson's volley against Forest. Yeah,
or his solo effort against Man City.
Yes, although that did place Norwich 11th, which is their highest finish in the Premier League for however long, and like sixth highest finish in history. So even for how much it's maligned,
Bucks against Cardiff, no Birmingham. Birmingham.
Yeah, that was a great one, wasn't it? Dribble from the halfway line. Also, maybe like Jerome away at Bournemouth in Alex Neil's first game.
Yes, against 10 men.
Yeah, although we did finish below them, actually, didn't we? So
doesn't matter. They went up in the end. Long way, shout.
Wes in the same game as Housen against Forest. Pritchard in the same game as Housen against Forest.
I love this debate, though. I love this debate because it's so it's infinite and it can never be final. It's completely subjective. Please, Twitterers, get involved in this. Tell us what you think. Email if best. Charlie, here's your apology. Next week. We're wrapped up unless anyone's got any other business. That's it done. Steve, thank you so much. Aces as always.
Cheers, Michael. Enjoyed it.
Dan, pleasure.
Thanks, Michael. Good fun as always.
Thank you all so much for listening. We really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed it. That's it though. Time's up. We will see you next week. Until then, that's a wrap.
The Athletic.